All right, so hopefully you can all hear me okay. And thanks everyone for joining in. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and we are live here on Zoom for our, it's March 19th, 2020, World Peace Diet Circle meeting. I'm joined by Madeline. She's also on the call. We are just back here from a two-month lecture tour. We got back a couple of days ago to Northern California. The last few lectures we were going to be giving, two in San Luis Obispo over the weekend on Saturday and Sunday, and then one in San Jose on Monday, were canceled due to the coronavirus. So we came back. We arrived back here on, it was Monday night, actually. We drove up from Ojai. But the last time we were talking was a whole month ago, and it seems like a lot has happened since then. I really appreciate all of you joining us because I know that it's a stressful time for everyone on planet Earth right now, with our whole lives being intruded upon, I guess you'd say, by this pandemic. And as vegans, of course, there's all kinds of different issues. So what I'd like to do is what we normally do, actually, which is to go ahead and have a check-in at the beginning, maybe a short meditation, and then I'll talk a little bit about this. I think it's interesting to share. To me, this whole thing has many, many layers. Many layers and many perspectives, and very, very many layers, very confusing, I think, to everyone, and to try to unravel this. And I think that, you know, this could be somewhat controversial, I guess, some of the things that people will say, you know, and you're welcome to chime in, of course. But we wanted to basically, I guess what I wanted to do, and we'll do the meditation, but I'll just say what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about my perspective on this phenomenon that is manifesting right now in our shared experience here on planet Earth. And then talk about some things that as vegans we can do to prepare or be more prepared and be more happy during this whole thing, and also to help our neighbors and communities and so forth. And then love to hear your ideas, thoughts, fears, or celebrations, or whatever it is, and maybe share with each other about this. Okay, so that's the basic thing. And we'll be hearing from Madeline on, she has something she wants to share about this as well. And love to hear from you too. So remember, you can just press *6 if you want to unmute yourself. I think that's how this works. So I'm still getting used to the Zoom platform, which we've been using now for a few months. So they don't have that much experience with it still. But so, okay, let's go ahead then in any event and begin with just taking some time wherever you are to turn our attention within for a few minutes. So let's do that. And I'll just start out by giving thanks for this precious opportunity that we have to be together and connect through the technology that we have of Zoom and through the internet and through the telephone. A lot of you are just maybe calling on your phone. Either way, it's, of course, perfectly good. So we just give thanks for each other and for our shared aspiration to be a force for healing and awakening in our world. We give thanks for this precious opportunity of a human life to awaken to the truth that we are, to question the delusions that may exist in our minds due to the programming of our society, and to enjoy and to contribute to an awakening of human consciousness on this earth, to enjoy our lives and to enjoy the opportunity that we have to work together to be part of the healing of consciousness on this earth, especially as it relates to animals and to the ecosystems, to hungry people, to slaughterhouse workers and future generations, to be able to undertake a questioning of the underlying stories in our society, the narratives that are accepted in our society that create conflict and oppression and domination and suffering unnecessarily. So we give thanks to all the animals celebrating their lives here on this beautiful planet. We give thanks for this earth as a very beautiful, supportive matrix, I guess you'd say, or platform, or being, where we can learn and grow and develop our capacities, and give thanks knowing that what we are essentially is eternal consciousness. What we are essentially was never born and will never die, and that we are here functioning through a physical body as a means of learning and growing and contributing and sharing, and perhaps much more than that that we're not even aware of. So we just close by giving thanks, knowing that all the ripples that radiate out into the infinite web of relations from our being together here on this call, it will be ripples to bring awakening and healing into our world, to create the foundation and context for a world where peace and freedom and justice and sustainability are possible, and that we are contributing to the awakening of our consciousness and the consciousness of all human beings. We give thanks knowing this is so, and so it is. All right, so here we are. You know, I've been actually pondering what I would say on this call, because normally I'm very confident about the underlying ideas in the World Peace Diet and what we're talking about here. But with the coronavirus, which is sort of, like I say, impinging on all of us, to make the connections between that and our lives as vegan advocates and activists, as well as people on a spiritual path, what is our correct response to the situation? And so I've been pondering this because I tend to be kind of far out in left field compared to the dominant paradigm in our society. I don't believe most of what's going on. Actually, because I'm very skeptical about a lot of what's happening. So I guess the best thing is to just say that, you know, I haven't had a television for 45 years, and so I'm not part of the narrative that people are part of so much. I tend to get all my news from alternative sources that some people may say are not accurate. I also tend to trust my own sense of what's happening, and intuitively. So basically, my feeling here is that, like I said earlier, there's many levels to this whole thing, and the number one thing I think really for us as vegans and as World Peace Diet facilitators or as people part of the World Peace Diet circle, is that we look at this as an opportunity for us to learn and to grow and to contribute to what's happening in our world. That this is a challenge. I think this is definitely a challenge. What the purpose of this challenge is, you know, who's behind it, the whole thing, what's actually happening, you know, those are big questions, but I think there's many layers to this. There's a lot of people who are really suffering now, and I think maybe a lot more will be from the economic impact of this, as well as the psychological and social impacts and the being isolated. I know some are even, you know, kind of in quarantine of some kind here in the United States, North America. Our friend Tammy, who's I know on the call here, was with us. She's in Canada, was with us in Ojai, and she had to, when she went back to Canada, she is in voluntary or self-quarantine. We just got the order here in Lake County, California last night that we have to stay, it's called shelter in place, so we're not allowed supposedly to go out of our houses or go out into the world on anything that's not essential. So the whole idea is that we're supposed to just not contact anyone because of the risk of the coronavirus, to be either get the virus or to become a carrier of the virus. And so everybody is being strongly encouraged, or even, you know, sort of enforced that they do this, that they not mingle with other people, not, in many cases, not go to work, not go to school, not have any gatherings, not go to church. I mean, it's amazing the huge disruption this is causing. So I'm like really feeling personally that it's completely irrational. I mean, that's my basic feeling. But considering, from my point of view, how actually not serious this thing seems to be. I mean, given the fact that it's my kids don't get it, so why are we stopping school? So this is not just me. I mean, there's quite a few doctors and other people, you know, wondering a lot about this. So, you know, I guess the main thing is, you know, we as human beings in this society today are vulnerable to the media. We trust the media. We trust them to tell us what's going on. And that's, you know, kind of how it is. And so and then we trust doctors, right? And we trust them that they're going to tell the medical establishment to tell us what's right and what we should do to be healthy and so forth. So that's the situation. And I think all of us, there's sort of this spectrum, you know, of people either far to the left or far to the right, or however you want to look at it, or in the middle of trust of the government, trust of the medical establishment, and trust of the media. And so we all fall somewhere on that spectrum. So I think if we talk about this and we're in different places on this spectrum, then we're going to probably feel very threatened or upset or whatever by what other people say who are different places. And I guess there's just no way around that. But my basic life in the last 40 years has been one where I haven't, as most of you know, rarely, if ever, gone to the medical establishment. Stayed away from that pretty much, try to take responsibility for my own health. So from my point of view, my concern for the about the coronavirus on a scale of like 0 to 100 is probably around 1. I'm not concerned. I have no concern. I'm not worried about it at all. I would be happy to go to gatherings with people. I'd be happy to be in elevators with people. I'm just not concerned because I know I have a strong immune system. Natalie and I, you know, live on the road. We travel. We've been to India and China and all these places where people always get sick. And I'm giving, like, you know, sometimes 70 events in 60 days or whatever, with lots of sick people hugging me all the time. You know, I never get sick. So I'm really careful. You know, we work really hard to make sure that we have strong immune system. You know, we have strong lymphatic systems and all that. So, if someone has a cold, you know, it's not a concern to me. I'm happy to hug them and all that. So I don't believe in germs. So basically too much. I mean, you know, within reason, I guess I know there's been instances of bio warfare, like when the Europeans came over here, there was zoonotic diseases. And I think, you know, this is a huge issue. I mean, zoonotic diseases are diseases that are passed from animals to humans. And I do understand that. I mean, you understand that when you're living with animals, like we've been doing for 10,000 years in the West, we develop some kind of resistance to the diseases that come from living with these animals. So a lot of the diseases that we've developed resistance to, people here living in North America, like the, you know, Native Americans, had no resistance. So scarlet fever and smallpox, people were sick with that. They would take the blankets from that disease and they would give it as gifts to Indians to kill them, basically, just to, you know, and it did, it worked. I mean, it killed them off very fast, and we got their land, we took over, we used, you know, bioweapons from the beginning. This is nothing new. This has been done for hundreds of years. So I know there's a reality to that, but I think, you know, I was thinking about it, and I was thinking that, you know, the thing that was really, that the Indians were facing was a tremendous attack on them psychologically also, having these people come from another world that they could never really understand, coming from Europe on these ships and landing here and just spreading out. And You know, I think there was incredible stress on the Native American people also, and that probably made them more vulnerable to the diseases that the white people brought with them. And so I think for all of us, it's really important for us to work on that level, work on the level of not being stressed out about this, about the disease. I'm much more concerned about the government and what the government is doing to take away our rights, take away our freedoms, our basic freedom of speech, our freedom of assembly. You know, we can't assemble. We have to keep social distance. And the thing is, when these things happen, then it doesn't go back again to the way it was. You know, they take away freedoms and then they don't give them back. After the pandemic is over, it's over. And so already there's been draconian things happening in many cultures. People really, I mean, Denmark really just broke the record and, you know, unanimously passed a law to force every single person in Denmark, because of this coronavirus, to be tested. I mean, you cannot, if you don't want to get tested, you go to jail. If you don't want to take a vaccine, you go to jail. You know, so this is like the bodily, the right of consent is being just completely attacked in very progressive countries like Denmark. So this does not bode well, I think, for us. So I guess, you know, the basic idea, you know, in this whole thing is we can have lots of conversations about this whole thing, but I think we have those two dynamics going on. You know, how much we're concerned about the virus and how much we're concerned about the authorities and how they will use this as an opportunity to create more and more of a slave system for us as human beings in this society. There's something in the World Peace Diet that I think is one of the foundational principles, which is, whatever we sow, so shall we reap. And we have been reaping for thousands of years, unfortunately, a system of slavery of animals, of oppressing and dominating and exploiting them and using them without their permission. And we've been working hard to try to have more freedom and justice and equality for ourselves while eating these animals and dominating them. And I think, you know, this is all coming to a head now in many ways. And I think we're seeing, there's a lot of vegans who are using this as a platform to say, we've got to have a vegan world now. It's really, you know, this virus is a result of animal agriculture. And I think that's true. There's this whole narrative that the virus was started by, you know, in Wuhan by bats and you know, the wet live animal markets and so forth, and these are breeding grounds for zoonotic diseases, and that's where it all started. And there's a whole narrative about that, and that therefore, if we didn't have live animal markets, if we didn't have animal agriculture, we wouldn't have most of these epidemics that we've been having, you know, SARS and Zika and MERS, and there's been a whole bunch of them. There's been probably, there's a graphic that you've probably seen that every 2 years, whenever there's an election, there's always a virus that, you know, that comes like clockwork. And so these virus, you know, these epidemics, you know, have been coming, you know, over and over again. Every couple of years, we get another epidemic. This one, for the first time, for some reason, they're pushing really hard. And again, you know, there's many reasons for that, probably. I mean, there's you know, this thing, you know, the problem is, you know, we're all on different pages. But the basic thing is to understand that zoonotic disease is something that is due to animal agriculture primarily. That when animals are enslaved by us and we're living with them, we're putting, you know, huge amounts of antibiotics are used on these animals. We're creating all kinds of, you know, antibiotic resistant bacteria. We're certainly probably creating weird viruses. But there's much more to it. So I see, the thing is, I don't know personally that narrative is correct, that this particular virus came from those live markets. I mean, there's a lot of evidence, a lot of journalists, a lot of politicians saying, no, this was definitely not created by those. This was definitely a product of the bioweapons lab. you know, and there's a lot of evidence that that's true. It was definitely created. I mean, people who have looked at the virus and have looked at the sequence of proteins and all that have said that it's definitely human created. It's got, you know, it's got things in it that make it obvious that it is. We have, there's an article that I think I posted, I think I linked it, but by a person from the government who has now become somewhat of a whistleblower, but saying that there's right now, we have 13,000 scientists employed by the Pentagon and the CIA, but primarily the Pentagon, who are working on bioweapons. You know, so we have 13,000 scientists working on bioweapons. There's a whole huge long list of weaponized viruses and bacteria that are being developed by the United States to be used against other countries. So we're the primary. The United States is by far the military empire on this planet, and it's been using this. This is not the first time these things have happened. So I think and escaped. There's a lot of evidence for that. That the Lyme disease, for example, is a product of a bioweapons lab and so forth. So I think, you know, we have to realize that the animal agriculture mentality of domination and exploitation of animals and ecosystems and of people, which we're born into, we have created a system, a military empire type system that not only dominates animals, but basically is dominating us. And it has, it gets its traction from the fact that we're eating animal foods and the fact that people are eating animal foods every day, most of us, not us on this call. So, you know, that's why it's so great to be able to come together and talk with like-minded people. But the average person eating animal foods is basically eating a narrative of don't make connections, you know, stay naive, trust the authorities, and don't worry about the enslavement that you're causing. You know, and I mean, this is the thing, you know, we're living in a society of people who are unfortunately really asleep and don't understand what's going on. And you know, the problem also is, though, which, you know, it's just different worldviews that even I've noticed most vegans are also still not questioning most of what's happening. You know, we're not. Most vegans are not questioning it. Since I was raised in a newspaper family, maybe that's why I just really don't trust the media at all. The advertisers decide what's going to be in the media, in the CIA in the background. So when they say on TV, whatever they're saying, say they've got everybody now, can't go to school, can't go to work, can't go to church, can't go anywhere. People are just stuck in front of their television. Now they've got everybody, you know, they've got us, you know, and they're just blasting this toxic, fear-based, lie-based narrative to scare everybody, you know, make us scared of each other. You know, how do you control people? You make them scared of each other. How do you totally disempower people? How do you enslave people? You make them afraid of each other. How do you get rid of solidarity and joy and abundance and creativity and harmony and freedom in a society? You do exactly what's happening right now. And so I know it's wonderful for us to take this as a break. You know, a lot of people are being positive and saying, okay, look, we're gonna just shelter in place, we're going to meditate, we're going to take this as an opportunity to do some creative things, to spend time in nature, to connect with our loved ones and so forth. And that's great. You know, we should do that. I mean, we should try, you know, take this as an opportunity. If that's the situation, that's what we're doing. You know, here we are. But the thing is, it's being imposed. And who is it being imposed by? Who's benefiting from this? You know, I think that's the question. So, okay, Nancy has, can I post links to this information? Yeah, there's in the resources, I've got quite a few links in there. And if you look at some of those links, it'll start you on the path if you're really interested in this. I know a lot of people are threatened by this so much. So I don't, you know, I'm not here to scare people. I just think we need to really wake up and realize that we're being lied to about this whole thing. And keeping people afraid of each other about this virus that has, by all accounts, a very limited impact in terms of how deadly, supposedly deadly it is. I mean, it's a complete overreaction in my, from my point of view. And there's a, I think there's just a reason for that. So there's so many levels to this. So I guess the level of the highest level, I guess that, you know, it's from the highest level, we can just say that here we are as eternal consciousness on this planet, and we're here to awaken to the truth that we are. And I think ultimately what that is to see that our health, our physical, the health of our physical body is not subject ultimately to material forces, that we as spiritual beings have the capacity to thrive and be healthy, and that we are born into a society where from the time we're little infants, we're programmed to give that up, to become much less confident and to lose our health. I mean, so for example, one thing that's kind of interesting is Wim Hof, he's called the Iceman. I think I've posted links in the past to this, but I'll just say briefly, you know, what he's doing as a human being, I think, is something that's been done by millions of people in the past. He's rare today. But people in the past, I think, in certain cultures that were more evolved spiritually than we are, took control of their health, I think, better. And so he's just basically teaching ancient breathing techniques where you inhale and exhale and really breathe, really saturate your body with oxygen and really eliminate carbon dioxide, you know. And through that technique primarily, and these are ancient, I studied in Tibetan Buddhist tradition. So this is a practice called Tummo, or yoga of psychic heat, where you build up your body's energy reserve and heat, bodily heat. And he was able through that, and also every day regularly putting his body in cold water, which also powerfully stimulates the immune system and the lymphatic system. And so and that's something that I've naturally done for the last 40 years too. I'm like just always swimming in cold water myself. I love it. And so, but the basic thing is to realize that we as human beings are living in a society where technology, we're taught that technology is our friend, that it's helping us. And it's not in many ways. Technology is our enemy, quite honestly. I mean, it makes us too comfortable and we're bombarded with toxins. I mean, our water is fluoridated. Our skies have toxic air pollution. We're eating food that, you know, I mean, there's, what is, I wrote it down on the resources, 27,000 tons of toxins are spewed into the environment on planet Earth every single day. And this is like, and it all goes into the food and the water and the air that we're breathing. You know, our technology, you know, we have, EMF, electromagnetic radiation fields that are rapidly expanding. You know, we're kept too comfortable temperature wise and in many other ways. We're not active. We're not moving. We're sitting around a lot. We're not really living our lives the way our bodies would like to be lived, you know, have be lived, and with healthy air and active physically and growing our own food organically and all these things. So I think it's important to understand that technology is not our friend, and that we're in a society where we're overly trusting drugs and doctors and procedures to take care of us, to make us healthy. And that that this is being used against us. They can ring an alarm bell and say we have a pandemic. And I'm amazed that, quite honestly, that they don't have a vaccine for this, and that they're not just lining everybody up and doing mandatory vaccinations. But this is, to me, a test. They're just, I think, quite honestly, I think in many ways they're just seeing, you know, how far they can push people, and we just acquiesce to the insanity that's being imposed upon us. I mean, how far do we just go along with it, basically? And that's what I'm wondering. And I just hope that on some level, we just are aware that this is not in our, ultimately in our best interest. It's being, they're acting like they're caring about us, you know, like, but you know, I know I'm probably going way too fast for most of you. So, can I say, like the idea that, like Wim Hof, I just finished that thing with him. So he has developed these practices. And what I really like is that he took it to the laboratory. He's been into laboratories like at Stanford University and University of Michigan, University with, I think, other universities. He went into their laboratories and he dumbfounded the scientists, right? The scientists could not explain what he did because, you know, they have this E. coli bacteria that when they inject into someone, 100% of the time, it makes them sick for about 24 hours. I mean, 100% of the time, there's no one who, when they inject that with an injection needle into someone's veins, that they don't get sick within 24 hours, and for about 24 hours. And so he said, all right, try it on me. And they did it, and he didn't get sick. But the neat thing was that he then, in just a matter of about a few hours, he taught other people his techniques and had them do that for a few days. And then they went in and 100% of them did not get sick. You know, he taught the techniques to other people. So, and what he's saying is that a lot of the pharmaceuticals, what he says actually is virtually all the pharmaceuticals that are used for most of the problems that we're having psychologically as well as physically, if we actually take responsibility for our health and work every day to strengthen our mind and our body, that we can have control. I mean, we can be healthy as individuals. Now, this is a radical idea, but I think, you know, he's onto something, and it's not something new. I remember reading how when the Magellan, you know, the explorers from Europe were going around the Cape of, what is it called, Cape Horn, at the tip of Antarctica. There was all these icebergs everywhere, at the tip of South America, there were icebergs everywhere, and the Indians, they saw the Indians out there on the rocks, you know, swimming around in the water. I know that, you know, there's many cases of people who live on totally plant-based diets and living close to nature who had tremendous strength and ability. So I'm just saying that to help us perhaps question this idea that we're very vulnerable, that we're weak, that we need drugs, that we need vaccines, that we need procedures to be healthy. I mean, a lot of us I know have been sick for some, you know, we've had problems, whatever. We, you know, like for me as a kid growing up, I had an appendicitis and I had my spleen taken out and I had all kinds of things, accidents and so forth. So, you know, so I've had to, you know, somewhat deal with that. But the basic idea is that at a certain point, if we grow up and wake up, we can begin to take more and more responsibility for our health the way we couldn't do it as kids. And to just learn, make an effort to learn what we can do to be healthy, to really, you know, think about that, and then think about how we can just free ourselves from the cultural trance of fear and of being exploited by corporations and pharmaceutical industries and military complexes that are intent really on concentrating power and wealth in the hands of an ever smaller elite. I think, you know, this is a really important time in our society. This is a move is being made here. And definitely a move is being made. Like a move was made. See, this is the thing. I mean, I'll show my hand here. Okay. I mean, just 9/11, you know, 9/11, I knew when that happened, and Madeline and I mean, maybe for a few weeks we were kind of wondering, but you know, it became so obvious that that was a false flag, right? I mean, that was not done by who they say, you know, and it just, so immediately the Patriot Act was passed, immediately our freedoms got eroded, and they never went back, right? They got eroded, and this all happened. Our freedoms got eroded by this powerful thing that scared everyone. You know, and I understand now very clearly, for example, that if a jet plane, you know, went ramming into reinforced steel and concrete, it would be like tinfoil hitting a tree. It would just crumble and fall to the ground. I mean, there's no question about that. It'd be like, you know, these images of airplanes going through concrete and metal. It'd be like me putting my finger through a tree. It's not going to happen. But everyone believes it. You know, people, it's like we are so easily manipulated by images. If we see it on TV, it must be true. You know, if the talking heads say this is what happened, we believe them, even though it's physically utterly impossible for that to happen. And so, so again, you know, we have to really understand that, you know, these things cannot happen. That could not never have happened. That airplanes are made, they're plastic and thin aluminum, and they would just, it would be like, they would just crumble. Completely crumble. And so anyway, the idea is to just begin to question what's going on that we're being told, and strengthen ourselves and create communities as best we can that are based on sustainability, growing our own food or getting it from farmers markets, and just not buying into the fear. I guess that's it. You know, not buying into the fear. And keep questioning things, because we are sovereign beings, right? We are a spiritual being who has tremendous intelligence, tremendous capacities for healing. And I think this is the thing we have to really begin to become aware of, is that these official stories that, you know, the official story that we need to eat meat, dairy products, and eggs to be healthy, the official stories that we're superior to animals, the official stories that we're getting attacked by terrorists or whatever, so we have to, you know, fight and have wars and feed the military. There would be, you know, the enemy is not these other countries. The really enemy, if there's any enemy, I mean, it's really, I think, the certain forces within our own governments, actually, that we're trusting. So we're in a situation, I think, where it's time for us to just grow up a little bit more mature and learn to think for ourselves outside the boxes that they're putting us in and telling us. And there's probably a lot more to this that we can discuss. I'm sure you probably have comments and questions you'd like to make. I'm happy to address them. There's, you know, this is huge. I mean, it's really huge. So let's see, before I do that, I'm gonna see if Madeline, are you there? Are you around? I know she's kind of in the other room. We're living kind of in our RV in the driveway. So she may be in the driveway. Madeline, are you there? Let's see. I'm not sure if she's here. Oh, just a second. Madeline!
Yeah, I'm here.
Are you there? You there?
Hello. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
All right. Now,
can you hear me?
Yes. So can you talk a little bit about what your ideas are for people to be
yes.
healthy during these times? Because I think it's, you know, it's good. We talk about that. There's so many things that we're doing, and a lot of you are probably doing similar
yes.
things. You're being very conscious about your food and so forth. But we just think it's a time when everybody's worried, and sometimes it's hard to get things, that we'll go over some basic things that we should be doing all the time anyway, but especially now, maybe just to be healthy, if it really is true that we're at heightened risk about something. So Madeline, can you go ahead and
yeah.
please? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that we're in risk at all. I just think it's a special time, and maybe we're more at risk of all the chemicals than any virus or bacteria. So I think it's very important to try to eliminate as much as we can the chemical poisons and all that, the additives and everything, and eat really clean food. And it's a time to maybe get it more simple and eat some grains and some beans. And if we have a garden, we can forage on the live food there. But if it gets maybe a time where one can't get so much live food, I would suggest also what we're doing is at Sun Warrior, they have super greens. It's not vitamins. It's a whole food. It's dried and powdered in a very special way. And that's super green I'm talking about. And we got a couple of these containers, and one lasts about a month. So it's good to get more than one. And it has also the probiotics in there and all the greens we need if we can't have them fresh. Or even then, I sometimes use it in the smoothie. So, but the main thing is to have a good attitude and stay clean in our consciousness, which is through meditation and regular walks in nature, and just admire how beautiful nature is. I mean, we do so much against our beautiful Gaia Earth, and she is still giving us such a beautiful home. I'm amazed how much toxins we can dump, and it's still so beautiful. And through acknowledging the beauty and being in awe about it and be grateful for it, we can help turning the situation around. I also think it's a time to put our attention to maybe a kind of a creation or something we long liked doing for a long time, and there is now more time, so we can take that project, whatever it is. It could be writing, knitting, sewing, carpentry, or making order. Order is a very good thing, or cleaning, or whatever comes to mind, or more exercise. Exercise is really very important to do. So we get some good blood flowing and all that. So I think it's a time for positivity and gratitude, and we still have so much if we think, and not to concentrate on what seems really negative.
Thanks, Madeline. In the resources, we do have a link right at the very top, actually, if anyone's interested, if you guys are interested in that, because that's something that Madeline's been found out about quite a few years ago. Actually, when we were at a conference in Las Vegas, it was a vegan conference, we met the founder of Sun Warrior, who makes these greens, and he's a vegan, he's really a good guy, I have to say. I mean, his daughter, had some kind of terrible illness, and he just started exploring, why she was sick, and so he went vegan and he organic, and really ended up out of that whole experience. She healed, and he started this company to support people in healing. And so Sun Warrior is a very high integrity company based in Utah, and this green, it's called Ormus Super Greens. It's basically wheat and barley and rye, I believe, that are powdered greens, all organic and grown in a special, very high minerals, volcanic soil and so forth. So that, I think, what Madeline's saying is, if you want to have a really good foundation, if it's hard to get out and get produce maybe or whatever, you just want to, some of that every day in a smoothie or whatever, you always have something that's very good. You can also, if you have, I really recommend sprouting. Something we all.
I also like to add something about it's really a great production. It's not like any other green powders. It's like Will said, it's on volcanic soil, which makes it more mineral rich, but also I can't understand exactly how it works, but it's these tunnels where it gets dried through cool air. And so it's very, very clean. And like Will said, it's a really good guy, and we had good talks with him and all that. So that's what I would do. They also have something like liquid light, which is lots of trace minerals and minerals, and it actually helps to integrate the minerals one takes in every day through food and all that, because some people have difficulties in their digestion or microbiome. So it's maybe good to add that if you want to. We do this from time to time. I think it's a good idea.
Thanks, Madeline. The other thing is there's a company we discovered recently. It's called Vitamin C, and that's V-I-T-A-M-I-N, vitamin, but then C is spelled S-E-A. So it's a company that makes they collect their own seaweed, and it seems to be very pristine off the coast of Canada, in the north of Maine up there. And there's one called Triple. It's a triple blend, but it's just really, if you're concerned about getting minerals, for example, you know, it's got all the trace minerals in a very easily bioavailable form. So that's another thing that I think you might want to, some people will find very helpful. We've been putting that in our smoothies also. Just, we grow a lot of our own food anyway, and but I think when somebody puts a lot of love into food, and they really create, you know, do something really healthy and in harmony with nature, that it's great to support them, and it's probably helpful. The other thing I recommend is growing your own sprout.
And also, can I add something?
Yeah.
There is one which we like to take, is the triple sea vegetable, which is dal's kelp and sea lettuce, which is very tasty. And one can even put a scoop into the smoothie at the end, before one swirls it so much, you know, like, so it stays still intact. I would recommend the powders, or so what one adds, to just kind of mix it in gently at the end.
Right. Thanks, Madeline. Great. Yeah, and then and something we've been doing for years, actually, even when we lived on the road, we couldn't have a garden, but we could always make our own greens, our own sprouts. And so it's pretty good skill. It's not even a skill, it's very easy, but something, a habit, I guess, to you can grow them on the counter, get these jars that are straight on the sides all the way, you know, big jars, and you can buy sprouting jars like that online. And then alfalfa, clover, there's you know, broccoli, sunflowers. You can use different, whatever. There's lots of different wonderful vegetables and grains and legumes that you can sprout for a few days and get green, you know, get the sprouts, and then eat those. And it's really quite inexpensive, and it's loaded with nutrition, and you're growing your own food. If you have trouble, you know, having a garden, or you don't have a garden year round, that sprouts, I think, are something that's always good to be aware. Anyway, that we can grow our own sprouts. You can buy sprouts, and they'll last for, I mean, the seeds, and they'll last for a couple of years, usually, and before you, or at least a year. So you can grow your own sprouts too. I think that's another helpful thing. So I think it's, you know, there's these outer things we can do to support, like, you know, we have right here where we live, a local food co-op, where local farmers, once a week we can get food from them, and that's still running here in Lake County, which I'm glad to say. So to support local farmers as much as possible, grow as much food as we can ourselves, but also to really take time for the spiritual side of our life, because I think No, the ultimate reality is that we're just on this earth for a few years anyway. I mean, we're all gonna leave our bodies. So the question is how we're living, the quality of our time, the quality of our relationships. What are we living a mission to help others? Are we living a mission to raise awareness on the earth? Are we in a position where we're not just, you know, there in the store fighting for toilet paper with other people? You know? Are we actually living our lives and questioning things? You know, we don't need so many things, I think, really. I mean, living in Korea as a Zen monk, I learned you don't need toilet paper, actually. You can just use a bottle of water. And you don't need toilet paper. I mean, it's really not necessary. I mean, so many things that really aren't necessary. And so I think so many of the things that people are worried about, I mean, some things are necessary, right? We need food and so forth. But to become as much as self-sufficient as we can ourselves, and like, you know, we have solar panels, we get all our energy from the sun, we have water, we have backup water, and have backup, you know, we have enough food ourselves probably to last many, many months. We have, you know, we buy 25-pound bags of millet, rice, corn, quinoa, flax. I could go on and on. Netherlands, we've got like a whole pantry full of this. Like you can get those large 5-gallon containers are filled. We have them filled with probably about 10 different grains. And so, and we have a stone mill. We can grind our own, make our own flour and everything. So, you know, we have plenty of food for ourselves, and we could, you know, help neighbors too. If it came to that, and it could come to that. I mean, you know, supply chains, if this keeps going, supply chains could break down. I mean, that's the thing. It's like this direct attack on the most vulnerable people in our society, the people who are not prepared, the people who don't have extra money, you know, who, if they can't have a job, you know, they can't go to work, they don't have money coming in, they can't buy food. I mean, you know, it's really harsh. It's so harsh what we're doing, and the government is doing. So I think, this is the situation. If for some reason they're able, we're going along with this. You know, it kind of bugs me that we just don't, nobody's protesting more. I mean, I guess, you know, it's one of those things. It's kind of like everybody with medical stuff, people are really easily enslaved, you know, because medical, we're all afraid of medical, you know. So that's the thing. So I guess to understand this is what's happening, I think. Probably there is. Personally, I do think there is some kind of an agenda here that's not friendly. What's happening? And I think to make the best of it, to just be aware and watch what's happening, and support your friends and neighbors, and be as healthy as possible during this time, and to do the best we can to not let this erode our hard-fought freedoms. I mean, the freedoms that were hard fought by our ancestors and so forth, and to remember the deeper truths that we're just, like I say, we're eternal spirit. I mean, we're spiritual beings, so we can draw upon our eternal consciousness and the love and gratitude that are our basic true nature, the joy that we have of being alive, and let that feed us. Feed ourselves, let that feed our consciousness, and be open to intuition and question the official stories that are focusing on fear. And sometimes they make it sound, this is the thing, because we're very naive, I think, you know, they make it sound like we should sacrifice ourselves because of the old people and so forth. And we should, of course, that's important, but to have these draconian measures that are causing huge suffering, I mean, tremendous suffering, and taking away our freedoms, and making it sound like if anyone questions this, then we're not loving to the old people or something. You know, this is a psyop. You know, it's a manipulative psychological operation that's happening, and it's being perpetrated on the whole world, and people are being taught to be afraid, you know, of each other, and to, you know, the social distancing, all these things. I think they're, you know, it's really something that, you know, it's going to be hard to undo it. I'm not sure how it's all going to turn out. You know, I mean, it's going to, because once these things go into place, the wounds are inflicted on our relationships and on the way we do things, and government bureaucracies take away our rights, and it's hard to go back. You know, I mean, I still have to take my shoes off getting on an airplane. Like I might have a bomb in my shoe, right? I mean, you know, it never goes, it doesn't go back. It's the irrational insanity that we have to do, you know, insane, irrational things out of, for our own security, supposedly. And we don't question it. You know, I'm one of the only people, and Madeline and I, who, when we go through the air, when we get on an airplane, we don't stand in that thing and put our arms up and get radiated by that. You know, we always opt out. I always get a free massage, you know, from the people. I'm not going to go through that. But I think, you know, most of us just trust that the radiation and the chemicals and all that stuff, it's somehow we need it, you know, for our security. So the statistics on this, I mean, I put this in the resource. I'll just read this. I mean, because I just think it's very interesting. Like right now, the number of people that are dying from the so-called virus is up to 800 people a day worldwide. Consider that every day globally, 49,000 people die every day from cardiovascular disease, right? I mean, this, like Carl Esselstyn says, should never happen. I mean, there's no reason anyone would die of cardiovascular disease if we ate a plant-based diet, but we have 49,000 people dying every day. No one makes a big deal about that. We're talking about 800 people a day. It's 49,000, 30,000 roughly die every day of hunger. And why don't we mobilize about that, for goodness sake? I mean, that could be stopped. We're growing enough food every year to feed at least 10 to 12 billion people. We only have 7.7 billion, you know. So, I mean, these things, you know, this is so infuriating to me that we are mobilizing like so enthusiastically to cause, you know, massive disruption to people over this, and yet, you know, 26,000 people die from cancer, 13,000 die from smoking every day, 10,000 people die every day from medical errors. I mean, why don't we make a big thing about that? 10,000 people dying every day from medical errors, and yet, you know, that's so much more. 9,000 from respiratory diseases, 6,800 from alcohol, 4,600 from HIV or AIDS, 4,300 from diabetes, 3,400 from suicide. Now we should put this in perspective here. I mean, because quite honestly, according to very highly respected public health officials and doctors, this is nothing. I mean, if this virus had never been identified, there's no more people dying of flu and respiratory diseases this year than any other year. I mean, it's not like more people are dying. There's not more people dying. It's no different. They just created a narrative terrifying everybody about it. So it's amazing the power of the media and the power of the governments to just lock down. I mean, the idea is locking down and distracting us. What are they distracting us from? You know, one of the things that's interesting is that this started in Wuhan. There's so many layers to this. You know, one of the things that's interesting is that the day before, I guess it was about a week before this broke out, the U.S. military was in Wuhan. They were doing they were there on exercises, and a couple of months before that, there was a very high level gathering of top. Of the super wealthy elite, including the Bill Gates Foundation, and they had special meetings, and this is documented, to talking about a global pandemic. You know, what would happen in a global pandemic? You know, what kind of things would they do? I watched a video not too long ago of a report, you know, by it was commissioned by the Rockefeller Foundation of the best way to impose martial law on the population would be through a pandemic that they would, you know, they would create. So this has been studied, and it's been studied for a long time, and that China, of course, would be the model, because it's a very authoritarian government. They can shut everybody, they can easily shut everybody down, and that would be the way it should go. And I think we have to just realize that this is maybe is not what it appears to be, and to try to be loving with each other and understanding that this is happening. And it's not really to blame anyone. I mean, there's a certain, I think, natural tendency when you have an empire that's in place and it's getting shaky to try to clamp down, try to make more control. I mean, that's happened over and over again for history for thousands of years. That's what always happens. So it's happening. So here we are. We're seeing it happen. What I'm concerned about, I guess, is the world that our children are inheriting, I mean, the world that they're being born into. I'm really, you know, we want more health, we want more vitality. But like this says, you know, that big medicine typically blames respiratory disease deaths such as the coronavirus on bacteria and viruses rather than the major cause, which is toxicosis or systemic poisoning from airborne pollutants and from toxic diets. Every day, 27,000 tons of toxic chemicals are released into the environment by corporations. So we have, like in Wuhan, for example, tremendous, probably the most polluted air, one of the most polluted air in the world, as well as they were just launching a 5G. They had over 10,000 5G antennas going up, which are well documented, actually, to cause respiratory problems. It's very easily seen that there's many ways that this would be a distraction to say it's a virus. You know, oh, it's a virus. It's not pollution. It's not 5G. We want to roll out 5G. We don't want to talk about pollution because that's profits. But we'll blame a virus and we'll make more money, right? We scare people. We get more money, more control. You know, and the same thing in Iraq. I mean, excuse me, in Iran, they were also rolling out 5G. And that's another enemy country like China. We want to try to hurt them. And so I think, you know, the whole idea is to just understand there's many connections. I don't want to go into all this too much because it sounds like, sort of rampant conspiracy theories. But the basic idea is that we have to see that there really are factors that are not coincidental. And be savvy, just be savvy, and be, again, be healthy, take care of ourselves, take care of friends and neighbors, be a force for love and light and awareness in the world during this time. But please, at least this is my idea, at least for myself, don't just believe the official narrative about this. And it's very important to see that a positive future is definitely possible, but it really depends on how we respond, I think, to the situations that arise in our lives. You know, how do we respond? I guess that's the question. And to have a wise response means, I think, number one, to have compassion for those who are, you know, hurting, and to do the best we can to create contexts of sanity. The United States right now in the world is going through huge transformations, huge shifts of power. There's economic forces, there's banking systems that are actually collapsing, there's the oil and stocks. I mean, there's lots of stuff that this could be a distraction for. I mean, I don't know if you've been following what's happening with the oil, with Russia and OPEC. You know, I mean, all these things, these are huge. So it's no accident that we're having, everybody's supposed to be looking here while something else is happening over there, right? I mean, that's standard procedure. Everybody pay attention to this pandemic, and the news is talking about that all the time. What else is going on? You know, what else is going on? I mean, just be, you know, think about that, and try to maintain healthy communities and healthy individuals. And I think that's the thing is, you know, this life is a test. You know, it's like, how do we live our lives? It doesn't mean we don't have challenges, but how do we respond to these things that are happening in a way that we're creating more positivity and more awareness rather than reducing awareness. The whole idea is not to reduce awareness, to be mindful, to be conscious, to look deeply, you know, look deeply. How do we look deeply into this? Look really deeply. That's what veganism is about. We don't just see the hamburger and think, you know, oh, it's a hamburger, duh, yum, yum, yum. We see the cow, we see the we see what's happening. When we see the apple, we see the beautiful tree and the farmer and the atmosphere and the sun and the wind and the rain, and we see the whole collection of elements that were required to make this come into play, right? So when we see this pandemic, we need to look deeply, see what are the causes that are bringing this into existence. Is that in our shared experience? Look deeply. I mean, the problem is that everything is being censored. It's very difficult to find out what's happening. There was this one video that was really interesting. I mean, I was only able to see part of the transcript of it because it was put up on YouTube. It was taken down. It was put up on Vimeo. It was taken down it violated their standards, the social standards, because this video was by John Rappaport. It was an interview, and it was another interview with a woman who's a lawyer working to help educate people about the potential downside of vaccines. But basically, they were both banned from Vimeo and YouTube because they said they were making light of or questioning tragedies. You can't question tragedy. So right now, this pandemic is considered a tragedy. And no one is, if you question that on a video or on social media, you can be taken down, right? If you make light of it or question that it's happening or question what it is, it's very difficult. I mean, I want to just say, I'm with you all. I don't want to in any way sound dogmatic about this. I think the most important thing is that each one of us within the temple of our own awareness and ethics and consciousness question what's happening. I was talking to my brother about this. He's in Ecuador, and he was telling me the incredible suffering that's going on in Ecuador. Like, I mean, people, they can't leave. This couple was, he has a shamanic retreat center. They do ayahuasca ceremonies and stuff. He has a shamanic retreat center. There's a couple there from France, and they had to go fly home because if they didn't fly home, they weren't going to be able to go home. That was it. Like the last day. And so they had to each pay 5,000 euros to get a flight back to Paris. The price gouging that's going on by the airlines, for example, the way that people are being not allowed to congregate to do anything. I mean, so many things are just being stopped in their tracks. All these, protests against animal agriculture are being stopped in their tracks. It's amazing to see how you can't do anything. You can't do any protests or do any demonstrations or do any actions or do anything, right? You can't do anything. You can't have a lecture. You can't go to church. I mean, that's what they're saying. I mean, I think at some point we have to stand up and say, we're going to gather anyway, right? I mean, we're healthy. This thing, the suffering that it's causing. But my brother, the point I wanted to make was, my brother said, and this is very interesting, because what he said was, because he watches TV a lot, so he's kind of, he was thinking that I'm being, questioning this too much, and he said, Will, you have a PhD, and, that means that you went through the system, and people can trust you, because you have a PhD, so people can trust you. So you have to be careful about what you say, or people are going to say you're just a wacko. Your PhD is not going to matter anymore. I just thought that's very true. And it's like, as soon as anyone questions the official narrative, it's like you've stepped outside the bounds and you're not allowed, and now nobody's going to believe you anymore, right? So it happens a lot. It happens. It happened to T. Colin Campbell a lot. He has been labeled a wacko by so many people. And it's happened to, many of the people in the vegan movement, many people in other movements who step outside the official stories, they want to be debunked and be called a nut. So this is what we're all up against, essentially, is we just need to have an inner truth detector that we can rely upon to help us know if what we're hearing is true or not. And that is something that we can cultivate and develop. It's our intuition. And that is something. So you don't have to believe me. I mean, don't believe me. Don't believe anything I'm saying. I mean, certainly wouldn't want you to. But I'm just saying, each one of us, I think it's our sacred responsibility as a human being on this planet at this time, especially in these critical times, to do the best we can to make us a really concerted effort to get to the root as best we can of what's actually happening here, and to be a positive influence in our own lives and the lives of others, in the sense that we're connecting with the truth as best we can. I think it's not about blaming anyone. I'm not into blaming anyone. I'm just to see the forces that are at work. There's very powerful forces in the military, industrial, medical, pharmaceutical, media, banking complex, right? These forces are amazingly powerful, and they're very finely tuned to go to the core of people's fears and to manipulate people. And so just be aware. And this is because we're vegans, doesn't mean we're immune to that. We are not immune. We still are very much, you know, part of society. And even though we're, you know, again, we're just here for a few years on this planet, then we're going to leave, and the next experience will probably, in many ways, will be conditioned by this experience. That's why it's so important for us to live this life in integrity and be a force for healing and love as best we can, because the next life, wherever it is, and our next experience of consciousness will be embodied in some experience somewhere, in some realm somewhere. It's going to flow from this, right? So if we're living our lives manipulating and afraid and using other beings, that's going to happen. It's going to happen to, you know, probably in many ways to us, you know, or we'll continue that same consciousness. So the idea is, we're on this earth now, not just to be kind and loving, but to be wise, right? To be wise, to be insightful. If we're just kind and loving, then we can be harming people or animals, right? I mean, the old saying is that there's this wonderful monkey who looks down on the world with compassion, and he sees this poor fish swimming in a stream, and with this great compassion, he goes down and rescues the fish and brings the fish up to the safety of his tree. You know, very loving monkey. And it's the same thing with us. You know, we need to develop wisdom to go with our compassion. So that saying in the Bible, I think, I don't know, I don't like it that much, but it's something like, you know, be harmless as doves, but be as wise as serpents, or something like that. But, you know, the idea is, don't be naive, look deeply and just question, but also realize that love is the only power. Love is the power. And as we connect with love, and be love, and be kind and loving, we're on a foundation of total strength and abundance. And if we just give, have this life be a life of giving, then when we're at the end of our life and we move on to the next life, we will look back on this life and we'll think, we'll be glad we lived our life the way we did. You know, that's the most, I think fundamentally the most important thing is that just go to that point when we leave the body and look back and just feel into, am I living my life now so that when I leave, I'm going to be feeling, wow, that was a great life. I came here to do what I, and did what I came here to do. And I'm just so honored, really, to be able to be with you all, because one of the things I think that is the foundation of everything is what's called right association. You know, who we associate with, who we hang out with. And we're hanging out right now, you know, for a whole hour and a half. And we become like who we, you know, hang out with. You know, we become like who we associate with. And I think it's so precious to have a community where we have a fundamental sense of being part of a similar aspiration for truth and for compassion for all living beings, and to just manifest that as best we can. So the World Peace Diet is, you know, one manifestation of just a series of thoughts and ideas that has kind of brought us together. But now here we are. So I'm going to stop here. I'd love to, you know, hear any thoughts any of you have. I'm sorry I went on so long. I didn't mean to, but it just sort of happened. But Madeline, I really love you and appreciate you. And so go ahead and press star six and say something if you'd like. I'll open it up, maybe one at a time, whatever. So who's this? Tammy? Okay, Tammy. Hi, yes, go ahead. A little louder. Can you speak louder? Get closer to the mic, maybe?
I thought I was on mute earlier, so I'm sorry if I distracted anybody. I realized in the beginning of the call. You know, the gift that veganism and being a conscious awakening person has given me is the ability to sense things deeply and intuitively, and I'm deeply disturbed. You know, I'm even struggling a little bit with meditation, and but disturbed intuitively in a way that I haven't ever felt, to be very honest with you.
Right.
I'm deeply disturbed intuitively that something really nasty, and I know I'll get back grounded again around it and just do my part, but it's kind of like the more you know, you can't know. And it's like, you know, there's so much pressure. Like I come home and I said to my daughter, no, I'm fine, but I'm not allowed to see my grandkids, and she's a nurse. And then if they test you and they find out that you had something, they're going to put you in quarantine for another 3 weeks, and you can't see the grandkids. Nobody can risk being around you. And even people that don't seem to be as fearful, because she's a nurse and have read a lot about what could possibly be going on behind the scenes. And there is definitely some stuff going on that really scares me. I could feel it. There is pressure. Everyone is in fear because it's maybe not them. They might be more open-minded, but it's a partner, or it's an elderly parent, or it's somebody making them think that they can't see, do, go anywhere. And there's energetically, I feel this mass hysteria, fear, and that something, it just feels really, really uncomfortable for me, like really uncomfortable.
Right. Thank you, Tammy. I really appreciate you sharing that. Tammy's, I think I mentioned earlier, is from Canada. And so she went back in, you went back in and had to be quarantined. We only have a few minutes left. And there's a few other people that want to say something. So I think, you just shared that beautifully and that intuitive sense that there's something going on here. So thank you for sharing that. Anyone else? Let's see if someone else is 819-805-4258. Are you there? Yeah, I noticed you are.
Hi, Will. Hello?
Yes, hello. Yep. Okay, go ahead.
Hello. Hi, everyone. Michael here. Hi, Will. Hi, everyone on the call.
Oh, Michael. Michael. Okay. Hi, Michael. Yeah.
Hi, Michael. Yeah, I'm in Costa Rica now, and it's kind of a depressing time for me. Starting a peaceful village and trying to do a vegan community here. Yeah, about an hour from San Jose. And I've heard all about this, and I agree. Well, there's something more behind this, pertaining to the government and corporations and so forth and elites that are trying to keep us in fear and in violence and enslaved. And it's sad because a lot of people are affected by this, and not just, you can't go out or you can't do this or you can't do that, but the people that actually are earning living and they have families and so forth, and they can't see them or whatever, they're in quarantine like Tammy. And for me personally, it's kind of hard because I have a tourist visa. Every 3 months I gotta go out of the country, and now it's kind of a dire situation because I don't know what's happening. I don't know if I can trust the media telling me what to do, and a lot of the offices are even closed, the government offices, and so it's a real, real hard time for some people, including myself, living here, kind of isolated in the mountain. And just today, recently, I saw burning a forest like right beside my house and the house that I'm renting, and it's devastating to see the mentality of people and how they don't like you were saying, how they're so much into this fear based mentality through media and all that and through the governments, but how they are so disconnected from nature and are kind of like against nature. And a question that I had for you, Will, was as vegans, like what can we really do, like in this time of crisis? Because it sometimes seems like really dire for us, and we know that there's this happening right now, and you put it at 1 out of 100 on a scale, and yeah, I don't really pay much attention to it as well, but it really does seem at times that the forces are greater than the vegan movement, and at times the vegan movement is more a greater force for so.
Okay.
Sometimes you can get it down.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for checking in with us about what you're doing in Costa Rica and working to start a vegan community there. And you know, I think basically, you know, what we can do is to just continue the movement. You know, keep the movement going. And one of the things that bothers me, you know, is that I just read an article that many of the vegan restaurants are just going out of business because of the coronavirus. You know, they can't survive. They're financially just closing their doors. You know, the economics of this is really hard on marginal businesses. And a lot of vegan businesses are their niche. So it's still a niche, somewhat of a niche business. And so it is an attack. I mean, I had my lectures canceled, you know. I mean, like, I didn't want to cancel them, but people were afraid to put them on because they were afraid of, you know, of whatever the government might do. I don't know what, but, or people wouldn't come, or, you know, it's all this fear. So we can't do our thing. So I think, the best thing to do is to just communicate, you know, as best we can in a loving way. It's difficult with medical. They know medical is the thing, you know. And the other thing I guess I just have to say is that we don't know how many cases there are of this. You know, they say there's X number of cases. It's based on tests. The test for the coronavirus is called the PCR test, and it's never been actually developed well. And the people that are getting sick, like this article that just came out about Italy, 99% of the people who died from the coronavirus in Italy had other diseases. You know, over 2/3 of them were smokers and drank alcohol regularly, and like a half of them had diabetes. They had respiratory diseases. They were mostly in their 80s. You know, they're really sick people that are dying from this. You know, it's not young people. It's not healthy people. It's very sick people. And then the thing is, they artificially create the illusion of a bad situation, right? Like normally, if someone goes to the hospital and they have a flu, right? They go to the emergency, they have a cough, they have a flu, whatever. You know, it's no big deal. They give them a few pills and they send them on their way. But now, oh my gosh, oh, you might have the coronavirus. You've got to give you a bed, right? So everybody gets a bed. Now they're in out of beds. Of course they're in out of beds. I mean, you know, the whole thing is manufactured. It's not a problem. I mean, they're making a problem. They're saying it's coronavirus. They usually don't do the test. They say, very often, if you read the media, they say it's presumed cases. They don't say cases. They say presumed cases because somebody in a nursing home who's 80 years old and has 3 other diseases and has trouble breathing, and now they say, oh, someone visited the nursing home who was in China, so it's probably she has coronavirus. They don't test. Even if they do test, the test is notoriously inaccurate. I mean, it's not a good test. It's never been actually, it's never been actually tested. It never actually tested the test in any kind of way, even though coronaviruses have been around and studied since the 1970s. So, you know, this whole thing is completely corrupt. The CDC and the WHO, I don't trust them at all. And I just think we have to realize that we're being played. I mean, basically, I think so. The fear of this, we don't, you know, whatever they say in the media, just understand the experts can so easily spin this thing and keep the whole thing going. And what's happening, you know, what's going on. So anyway, April, I know someone had said she wanted to ask a question. So I'm sorry, we're just about out of time here, but I don't want to go on too long. But anyway, go ahead, April.
Phil?
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Tuttle, you said we need to stand up to the government. At least I think that's what I understood you say, and just not let them bully us this way, as my interpretation of your words. But what do we do? I mean, if they seems like they can do whatever they want. What do we do at this point?
I know what you mean. I mean, I know exactly what you mean. It's sort of like, you know, it's like, you know, I know that this whole thing is ridiculous, but on the other hand, you know, we don't want to like get arrested and go to jail because we're refused to go along and say, well, I'm going to, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, the thing is, I don't know what to say. I mean, except to try to just build a, you know, through communication and through meditation, build a foundation of trust among people that you trust. And share these ideas, and it is happening. I mean, there are online forums where people are talking about these things, who are not just going along with the cultural program, and just understand it. And I think there's a lot of, I mean, I think there's a lot of people who do smell, you know, like there's something not really accurate here. But then also, make the best of it. I think that's the thing. I mean, hopefully, I mean, we don't know how this is going to play out. I think, to me, this is perhaps indicative of an act of desperation. There's this need by the elite to really clamp down and take control. And so I think if we just keep basically doing the best we can to be vegan advocates, to bring the message, to say that we, you know, I mean, I've been saying to some vegan groups, you know, go ahead and, you know, I mean, who are canceling events, say, you know, let's not cancel events. You know, I don't know if they're going to do that or not, but I think it's better to try to just go ahead with things if it's possible. And depends on the, you know, on the state and the city, on the situation. But just to, you know, talk about how irrational it is to be closing down schools, for example, of young people, when there's virtually no chance that a kid's going to have this come down with this thing, and probably it's worse if they stay home from school and they're with their grandparent or whatever. I mean, even if you believe that whole narrative, which I actually don't, but the whole idea is that we're at the government, everything is very irrational, and there's who knows what's going on in the background. We're just being pushed, we're just being kind of herded along. We're being herded along. It's like a lockdown, and so how do we respond in that situation? You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to say. I think that's something each one of us has to decide within our own, the sacredness of our own awareness. But I read an article that I liked, which was saying that, you know, churches, for example, have historically always been sanctuaries from government oppression. I think churches should meet on Sunday, quite honestly. I mean, you know, you know, and do classes and question things. I mean, don't you know, if churches are afraid they're going to lose their governmental 501c3 authorization, they're you know, and we've given away so much of our power to the administration of a bureaucracy that can really turn on us and stop us from even gathering together or talking together honestly. So I think it would be great if more churches, for example, said, look, we're getting together, and, you know, church isn't a place where we're supposed to huddle together in fear of a virus. You know, come on. I mean, churches are supposed to be places where we celebrate the infinite spiritual potential of a human life. You know, churches and meditation centers and these places. And I think it's really disturbing to me to see so much fear about this thing. And people just, it's like whoever's, if you're not afraid, then you're not politically correct. Now, that's kind of how it is. It's like, you know, we shouldn't be so afraid. I mean, it's you know, it's ridiculous, I think. I mean, it just shows that we're believing the official stories in a blind way, and just be more open to spreading health and happiness. And that's how I see it. But again, you know, I am not the typical person. I have not been to a doctor in 50 years. You know, I'm an unusual case. So I know what I'm saying. Maybe nobody agrees with, but that's just how I feel. That's how I feel about it. So anyway, that's it. But it's a great question, April. I really appreciate your asking that question. So anyway, gosh, you know, here we are. I really appreciate it. We had by far, you know, quite a bit more people on this call than we normally do. And I really appreciate your staying. You're still, everybody's still on. We have like 40 people. And I think it's a really important discussion that we're having. And, but I also don't want to monopolize people's time. Does anyone want to say something just in closing, or have any suggestions of how we proceed with this? Because I think it's really, I'm feeling very happy that we were able to at least talk about it.
Will, may I say something?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear.
Oh,
I hear
two people. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Judy.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Judy.
Yeah. Hi. So go ahead, whoever that was.
It was Lily. I would have you go first, Judy.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I just agree with everything you're saying, of course, Will. But I do want to say to everybody that I feel like this is opening a window for us and other people who are aware of how powerful love is, and of the whole nonviolence ahimsa message that we're trying to bring to everyone's awareness. And I feel like love overcomes fear. We know that. We need to really stand strong in that, help people understand that, mm-hmm. and explain what love is, that it extends to all beings. And I just have this feeling that this is an opening somehow to bring human beings into a higher state of consciousness, because there's so much fear and so much going on. It's not just this virus and what they're making it look like. It's also all the pollution, all the warnings of extinction and global warming and all of these dire warnings. It's causing people, I think, to go deeper than they ever have. And one of our jobs, I think, is to help birth this new awareness of who we really are, that we are not victims, and we are not going to just be afraid anymore.
Right.
And so I feel like that's our job right now. And of course, yeah, it is scary, but I think it's an opportunity. So I'm looking at it that way. I was out riding my bike today, and I saw families together, because of course they can't go to school and all that. So now moms, dads, and kids are together at the park, and I thought, well, that's a beautiful thing, and I think that's part of this. I think something is going to happen. I hope I'm right. But I'm feeling this upwelling of love energy.
Right. Thanks for sharing that, Judy. Yeah. I think that's a beautiful idea, because what you're touching into, I think, is something I've been feeling, which is, I think there is, at a deeper level, human consciousness is unfolding like a beautiful flower in many ways. And this, you know, there's it's almost like an unstoppable awakening that's happening, and veganism is part of that. And this is perhaps an effort to stop it, you know. But I think, you know, like I say, to keep feeding, like every day, Judy and I and Madeline and a lot of other people, at noon we say the prayer of compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And I think it's great just to say that, you know, every day at noon and other times, just think and just feel and know that there is a field of compassion that encircles the earth for all living beings, and that we're feeding that with our consciousness. We're feeling compassion and respect and kindness and alignment and solidarity with all expressions of life, for the animals, for other human beings. and that we exclude no one from the sphere of our kindness and concern, and we're strong in that, that viruses and other these other things, these are not powers in our world. I mean, we have we're far more aware than that. And the neat thing is that it's also maybe people having to buy foods to last them. And I think a lot of people are now stocking up probably on, hopefully, maybe on grains and beans and more plant-based foods, and realizing, I think there is an underlying message in this whole thing that animal agriculture and animal-based foods are toxic and harmful. And that's, I think, zoonotic illnesses and all in general, this whole thing, I think this is going to help our movement ultimately. That's what I think. But we have quite a few people who want to say something at the very end here. Somebody has asked if we could maybe have more meetings instead of just once a month. So I'll think about that and send out an email, like maybe once every week or maybe every other week. That might be helpful. Let's see. Anyone else want to say? I mean, we're really a little bit over time, but I can take one, maybe another one. Go ahead, somebody.
This is Lily. This is Lily, and thank you, Judy. I agree totally with you. I've been just thinking, this morning I got up with such gratitude just to be alive, and that feeling of being alive and sitting on my deck. And I happen to live in a very beautiful place in the middle of the forest in Humboldt County, with a meadow and mountains around me and flowers that I planted years ago, and they keep coming up every year, the daffodils, and it's just so beautiful. And I'm thinking about this living in the forest, and I'm thinking about my mother, who told me one of the best times in her life was when she walked in the forest in Poland and tried to escape the Nazis. And she was, she was 20 and beautiful, but she stayed in the forest and slept in barns and ate what she could. And I'm thinking, that was my mother. Nobody's chasing me down like that. And they finally caught her and put her in a concentration camp. But for 3 months, she was free. And she actually has told me many times, this was the best time in her life. So this time that we have, this time of repose, and I agree with almost everything Will says. I don't agree 100% with Will, because I always have my own way of thinking. But I certainly am grateful that 13 and a half years ago I read The World Peace Diet, which transformed and revolutionized my life forever. And I've been living in the country like this, out in the forest now for, almost 17 years, and I know how to stock up. So what I do is I offer people services to stock up on how to do it, and I tell them I do it as a vegan. And I get calls all the time, and they want to hear more. And so I do a little bit of activism every day, but I know that the final outcome, just like the final outcome of my mother's running in the forest, could have ended in death, but it didn't, so it ended with me. She had me after the Second World War, and so I'm grateful that she ran away in the forest, and she said she was healthy. She ate little, and I said, well, what did you eat? And she said, because she knew I was a vegan, and I said, what did you eat? And she said, mostly the kind of food you eat. The one thing I did have was some milk from some cows that were in the barn, and I tried to get it. But otherwise, black bread, beans, potatoes, and anyway, I come from that stock, so it's not surprising to me that I love living in the forest and love being vegan, and I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful to be a vegan. If you are a vegan today, you have the greatest gift of life that has ever been given to a human. I'm not talking about any of the other animals, but the greatest gift, just to watch the celebration of life, to watch the hummingbirds just flying all around and dancing and then taking a few sips and then flying around my head this morning. I can't tell you what a beautiful day I had today, this first day of spring, the vernal equinox, and I wish you all well, and stay healthy, happy, and positive, because positive energy is what will get us through this, and we just can't focus on any of that other stuff, because that other stuff isn't real. The only thing that's real and true is that positive celebration of life, which is pulsating through all of life. Well, I'm going to pass with that. Thank you.
Well said. Thank you so much, Lily. And that's really true. You know, giving thanks and gratitude for all the many blessings that we have in our lives, and just being vegan, being awakening out of the prison of eating animal foods is a huge, huge thing to be grateful for. All right. So is that okay with everybody? Is there anyone else that really wants to say something here before we go? We've gone about 15 minutes over already, but I don't want to close it up because it feels like there's so much interest. But is that good? Is that okay with everybody?
Oh, I guess I'm 7 hours behind instead of 8.
Who's
so
this?
I tuned in late. Sorry about that. Davi.
Yes.
Or I'm 7 hours ahead.
Oh, so you're in Europe.
8. Okay. Oh, well, I'm late to the party.
Oh, you just get here?
Yeah, I couldn't get back because, because of all of the, I had a flight cancellation and, I went somewhere else, but then I'm back in England.
Oh, you're in England. Wow. Well, we just had an hour and 45 minutes conversation, and I think everyone's been very wonderful to stay this long, but I think we should probably close it now. But maybe we can do one maybe every during this time of this crisis. You know, we can talk, we can share more maybe every other week or something like that. I'm open. Just send me emails if you have ideas or thoughts about that. I think that the best thing is to close it up here. So I just hold you all in my heart with thanksgiving and gratitude for your presence in our lives, and knowing that even though we're separated by some miles physically, that we abide in the same aspiration for healing and for awakening and for connecting with the deepest truth. That we can in a way that's meaningful for us. That's, I think, the most important thing. I don't think anyone can tell someone else what the truth is for them. You know, each one of us are awakening to it on our own. And we can help each other, I think, through sharing our ideas and our experiences. And I'm really grateful for that opportunity. So we'll be gathering again the third Thursday of April. I'll of course send out emails about that and keep everybody up to date about that. And maybe we'll have another one or two gatherings before then, if that's maybe it's a good idea to share some more ideas or insights about what's happening, because things are moving really quickly here. And I think it really is good for us to stay connected, you know, if you found this helpful. So, much love to you all. Maybe I'll unmute everyone and we can just say the prayer, which is compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. We can say that together. So here we go. All right. Unmute everyone. Ready? Together. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. One more time. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere.
Thank you.
Okay, so thank you, everyone. I guess I muted everyone. There's it's understandable. People have other things going on in the background, so it's a little hard to hear everybody. But I did hear your wonderful voices. So much love to all of you, and thanks again for joining us. And feel free, I'll go ahead and send out the recording of this. This has been recorded, so you can listen to it or share it with friends if you want, just the audio recording. And we will be meeting third Thursday of April, and maybe before then. I'll send an email out, talk to Madeline about it. So thank you, Madeline, and thank you all, and much love to everyone, and go forth with gratitude and an open mind and questioning the narrative, but remembering that we're all in this, obviously we're all in this together. Take care. Much love to all of you, and thanks again.